Hello, everybody. Welcome to our monthly Platinum Group Coaching Call here for March 15th, 2018. This year is just roaring along, crazy. First quarter almost over. All right, so we had a couple of pre-submitted questions. I'll start out with those, and then we will move into live Q&A and discussion. Just a reminder that you can always raise your hand if you have a question or want to talk through anything by dialing star two on your telephone keypad. And then, of course, if you're on the call page itself inside the training portal, then just type in your question if you're connected that way and hit send, and I will get it over here and read it and address it. All right, the first question is from Janet, and I see that Janet is also on. So, Janet, I might bring you on. This is related to our, so Janet and I are working together. We're building a lead generation machine for her, wrote a lead magnet for her, set up some really cool marketing automation. She was asking about these nine-word emails so, Janet, and I'll definitely give you feedback on this. But just know that I will write these for you. So, don't worry. If it's part of the lead generation machine we're building for you, then this will be part of what we give you, what we build in. But this is also something, by the way, guys, if you have my email prospecting playbook, I believe it's in the bonus resources area of the academy. And if it's not, I'll make sure to put it in there. In fact, let me write myself a note. Email playbook, bonuses. It's a really good guide and game plan for prospecting with email. So if you know my warm email prospecting strategy, and I know most of you do, this is even more holistic than that. So it basically gives you a plan for using email. And the idea is, look, let's get some quick wins first. Then let's start generating some leads from cold prospects. And then as we're getting feedback, as we're getting responses and people aren't ready, let's nurture them until they are. So you're creating a nice little flywheel for yourself of potential business. And in that book, I introduce this idea that I've learned from a marketing legend, Dean Jackson, the nine-word email. It's something we use here quite frequently in my coaching and training business. It's very, very effective. And the idea is to follow up. So Janet is basically, when somebody downloads her lead magnet, she wants to follow up. But rather than doing your typical follow-up, hey, thanks for downloading this, that, and the other, did you get a chance to read it, that kind of thing, which is how everybody else approaches it, she's sending a nine-word email, which will be an automated response, but it will look like it's really coming from her. It really looks like a one-to-one email. And the nine-word email, it's really more of a concept than literally nine words. The first email that Dean Jackson used when he came up with this concept happened to be nine words, so that's what he calls it. But the whole idea is that it's very short, and it's a question. And it just begs a response because you've built tension in your copy, and it increases the response rate dramatically. So what she has here is what content, so for her email body, what content do you use to build trust with your prospective clients? Or an alternate question she has, how does your content build trust with your potential clients? I think both could work. But I think it's kind of leading. You know what I'm saying? Like, what content do you use to build trust with your prospective clients? So build trust is kind of a big – I think it's kind of loaded with some potential – I think it might feel risky for the prospect to respond. And then the second one, how does your content build trust with you? So same thing. I suggest going with a more neutral question, Janet. Something to the effect of what kinds of marketing content do you typically publish for prospective clients? Or when it comes to your marketing content, what do you typically create or publish for prospects? Something like that, right? So notice the difference. It's not, all right, what kind of content are you using to create trust? Now you're saying, hey, what do you typically put out there? It doesn't feel as threatening. All you're trying to do is to start a conversation, right? That's all we're trying to do here. So I think that more neutral approach is going to work better. So, for instance, one of the things we're using here in my business is when you subscribe, we're engaging new subscribers right away with a 9-word email. And the question is, what types of clients do you work with? Notice, and by the way, I made the mistake of using something that felt risky, and the response rate was horrible. The question we started out with when we first started testing a 9-word email was, I think it was, are you having trouble finding good paying clients? Now, notice it's a perfectly innocent question on the surface, but think about, you know, you just joined, you just subscribed to somebody's stuff. That question can kind of feel like, oh, you're gonna lead me, you're gonna try to sell me something, as opposed to, hey, what kind of clients do you work with? Very, very neutral, and that allows us to start a conversation. We're not trying to sell something; we're just trying to engage with people, give them some helpful tools based on how they respond. We then give them some information we think might help them, and then eventually we might make some sort of small offer. Just to see if this is something that could help them, but the response rate was just through the roof. It went from, I want to say, less than 1%. It was like 0.2% to somewhere in the teens, which is pretty darn good for brand new prospects. Sometimes even in the 20% range. So again, Janet, we'll write those for you, but just FYI. In fact, let me bring you on, because I know you're here. Hey, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
How's it going? Yeah, I can hear you. How's it going?
Hey, it's Mateo. Just had the South Carolina Environmental Conference and got a lot of promising leads, so I'd have to follow up on those too. So I have a bunch of questions today, actually.
Okay.
And I hear what you're saying, and that made me wonder about whether or not I just messed up a response to another prospect. I got a prospect email in, and their email said, Janet, hope this email finds you well. I'm reaching out to gauge your interest in performing technical content marketing writing for Veolia. Please reach out if you have some time. And I decided to take your advice and keep it really short. And just said, I would be happy to discuss your content marketing needs and how I might help. You have a particular project in mind. How do you want to connect?
Mm-hmm.
And haven't heard back yet today, but that was just yesterday. So we'll see how that goes. I don't know if that was, okay, you know, coming on too hard, too soft, you know. I honestly don't remember ever meeting Scott this prospect, or even reaching out to them in any way, so I don't know.
Well, but if I understood correctly, if they're the ones then emailing you, then that's different, right? Because they're saying, hey, you know, we want to talk to you about helping us with some of our needs. That's different.
Right.
Then you can go ahead and follow their lead.
And was I okay in just saying, how do you want to connect? I mean, you didn't give me a time. Should I have proposed a time?
I typically, because it's important that you get someone on the phone. So instead,
yeah,
of giving them the option, what I like to do, I also don't like being aggressive and saying, great, let's connect. Is Thursday at 4 or Friday at 2? Which one is better for you? I don't like doing that. Instead,
yeah,
I say, I'd love to. I'm available next week. Here are some days and times. Would either one of these, any of these, work for you? Or if not, suggest a time that might be more convenient. And what you're doing is, you're not saying, do you want to talk or do you want to connect some other way? It's now an issue, okay, which one of these sounds good for you? And if none do, propose a different one.
Yeah, I kicked that around, and I don't know why I went with the way I did. It just did seem kind of vague as to.
Well, that's okay.
We'll see. The next question I have also has to do with this same lesson on the lead generation, and it has to do with the two nurturing emails. I filled it out and I sent it in, but the two articles that I'm proposing, I think, are great articles. They just happen to be for this, you know, I've mentioned in the past that there's this branding group that seems to have their act really together on doing marketing. And so I'm not sure if I'm actually promoting a competitor. I mean, they're an all services branding group. You know, we'll do it all for you kind of thing, from the content writing to the distribution to the follow-ups to all of this stuff. And of course,
But no, I wouldn't do that. If it's somebody, if it's another writer or an agency who could be a competitor, don't send a link in a nurturing email. And by the, just I'm giving everyone some context. So when you're following up with not yet ready prospects, you're nurturing them. Don't send, when you're sending them information as your follow up, don't send a link to somebody who could be a competitor. Send it to you know, an interesting article, some research that recently came out, third party publication, or some of your stuff. You know, it could be one of your articles, but not some other writer's or some other agency's website.
Well, I feel like I'm going to need to write a couple of articles then on just directly on marketing. You know, again, most of my writing is strictly for the clients, and I've got a few blog posts, but that's been about the extent of it.
Well, I don't think so, Janet. I mean, you maybe long term, but I wouldn't wait, because see, that's going to delay you right now. That you're putting an obstacle in front of you, and now until you get these articles written, you can't move forward. I mean, with content marketing as hot as it is, you should be able to find a couple of really good articles on content marketing that would be relevant to your audience. They don't have to be content marketing specifically for the water and wastewater industry, but just find something interesting in the area of content marketing that you think speaks to the way you think of content marketing, and start with that.
Okay. And last question. I feel like I need, with all of these contacts that I got over this conference, I need to really look at a CRM software package. Does this ConvertKit have that aspect to it? Do I just need to kind of?
No, ConvertKit does not have CRM built in. That's the one thing that it doesn't have.
Okay.
I'm actually kind of glad it doesn't, but they integrate with all the big, you know, CRM or popular CRM packages. So you may want to go on their website, because I think it is, if you're going to invest in something, it's worth going with something that's going to integrate with your marketing automation system.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And look to see what they have integrations built in with.
Okay. Yeah, I was looking at HubSpot, because I already use Sidekick.
I think that's one of them, but you may want to double check.
I will double check. Okay.
Yeah.
I just don't want to get started on one and then find out that I've got to manually translate all of that into a totally new system.
Yeah, no. Yeah, it's it doesn't have that. In fact, if it had it we probably wouldn't have gone with it, because it's just – that makes it really complex at that point.
Okay. All right. Well, I think, let me look at my notes. You've answered the other ones in that my question was, do I need to write these nurturing emails and the non-word emails, and saying no. So I'm going to leave it to you folks who know what you're doing. And
yeah, totally.
I've already sent in the other thing. I'll go remove it out of my box and find some different articles.
Perfect. Yeah, just something that's not going to send a prospect, like somebody in the group, for instance, send me a link to. So he's writing white papers, right? in one of the articles that he wanted to use as part of, you know, when nurturing longer-term prospects, was a link to an article that Gordon Graham wrote. Gordon Graham is one of the top white paper writers in the world. And I said, man, don't use that. I love Gordon, but if you're promoting yourself as a white paper writer, don't send prospects to some other white papers writer's website.
Yeah.
You know,
well, that was
you're
my
giving
thought.
Gordon all the glory.
Yeah, that was my thought, but I just, again, our niche is a little bit different as these articles do point out. So I'll have to see what I can find.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You are welcome. You are welcome, Janet. All right, let's do this. I got, it looks like Jennifer's got her hand raised, and then I had another question here from, I think it was Holly. So let's see. Jennifer, you are on. How are you?
Hi, Ed. How are you?
Doing well. Good to talk to you.
You too. So I've got a question for you. Mm-hmm. I had a call with a prospect yesterday who wants to do a six-month blogging contract, but she wants references. And this is actually the third or fourth time in like the last probably month or two that this has happened. And the first time or two, I didn't think it was that big of a deal, but it's getting old. And I don't so I just wondered, plus I don't want to keep sending. I've been sending them to my old boss and a friend of mine who I've actually done a lot of work for in the nonprofit world, not in the financial services world. And I know like they don't really care, but also it's not representative of my most recent work. And plus I don't want to keep bothering the same two people over and over again. Is this typical? Do you have any, is this normal?
It depends. I think this is abnormal. My experience has been, and not just mine, but working with a lot of coaching clients, to get that many in 3 to 4 months. He said it was the third or fourth request.
Yes.
That's.
I actually think the first person I know for sure the first person that I talked to who requested that did not actually even contact either one of them, and they still hired me. So I don't know.
So here's the thing. I think the first thing to understand is why prospects ask for references. And I'm going to make some generalizations here just to make the point. It may or may not be true. But the lower the person is in the organization or in the department, the more likely they are to ask, because lower-level people don't want to take risk, right? It's all about just, like, keeping things the same.
CYA.
And right, so like a manager is much more likely to ask for references than a director or a VP. So keep that in mind. That just comes with the territory. The second thing is some industries are much more risk averse than others. I think you're in financial services, right?
Yes.
So there's some dealing with all kinds of regulatory compliance. It's just a very risk averse industry. You might see it there more often than others. But I've coached a lot of people in the financial services world, and this is not something that comes up. The third thing is, I think the third thing is really thinking about, okay, what if it's unusual? Let's talk about what can we do to prevent the request to begin with. And I think one of the best things I can do, and this is something that I incorporate in my business even today, is I need people to walk down a certain path. You know, it's kind of like, have you been to, to race go-karts or one of these places where you got to go through an orientation, before you, and then you got to sign a waiver and all that. You know, it's like it's very important that people watch the video and that they ask questions and that they read the waiver and that they sign it, right? Because you know that if they do that, their chances of getting to an accident and hurting themselves are really low. So same thing, I think about marketing the same way. It's important that a prospect go through my website, that they've had some interaction there, that they're kind of more than halfway sold before we have a conversation. And that could be because they read stuff on my website or because they read stuff on my website and they came recommended from somebody, any combination of factors. my point here is that when that happens and you do it
mm-hmm.
right,
mm-hmm.
then the chances of them asking you for proof are way low. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, and this is why this woman that I spoke to yesterday is even more confusing to me, because she is a lower level, which does make sense, but I had initially contacted her director, and her director told her to contact me, and it was through a nurturing email, actually, because I sent her a piece. It's a credit union, and I sent her a piece that I had written for another credit union, and that's what initially got them to, like, I guess, perk up a little from, like, the initial, you know, emails that we had a couple of times before. And she
mm-hmm.
said, so after she had read that piece, she responded back to me and said that they were interested in, you know, kind of being more consistent with their blogging. They wanted to do 2 posts per month, and had I done any SEO writing. And so after, you know, I responded back to her and I said, yes, and here are links to 2 articles I wrote for a different financial, you know, institution's not the right word, but they do financial writing. It has my byline, it has my photo, and a link back to my website. And she really liked those articles. And I was like, and so then she was like, okay, great, let's move forward, let's have a conversation. And when I talked to her yesterday, she said she wanted to set up this contract for 6 months, and she really liked the articles that I sent her the links to. So then I was very confused about why she needed 2 references.
It's just – back in sales, you know what we used to call these people? See more.
Oh, no.
We used to call this person – because they always want to see more.
Uh-huh.
So you got a classic Seymour. It's, you know, it doesn't mean it's a bad thing. So here's what you do. I mean, go ahead. It's what I'm going to share with you is just more for the future. She's already asked, did you go ahead and then provide your 2 references?
I've given her 1 so far, because I know it's my friend who I know doesn't care, but I haven't given her another one yet, because I want to make sure I don't want to just send somebody's contact information without, you know, talking to them about it first.
Sure. Okay. So this is perfect. So here's what I do. So first of all, anything you can do on your website to, you know, have testimonials,
okay.
You know, some sample clients, that sort of thing, that's great proof. And I always want people to go through my website before we have a conversation, number one. That
okay.
typically eliminates a lot of it.
Okay.
Positioning yourself as an expert, which I know you're already doing. As your business grows,
mm-hmm.
talking more on your website about your track record. I'm not saying boasting like crazy, but you know what I mean. Like, inject
mm-hmm.
some of that in there. I've worked with companies, you know, to help them this, that, and the other. And then, so as you grow, just know that that's going to come down, because you're going to be able to do that. And then finally, when you get to the point where, even after all that, somebody asks you, here's what I do. This is going to take a little bit of courage, though, okay? But hear me out. I usually respond with, sure, I'd be happy to do that. Listen, I do get asked for references sometimes, and as you can understand, if you've been in that situation, you know, people are busy. So I just want to make sure that if I give you a couple of references and they check out, do we have an agreement here? I mean, are you ready to move forward? Something along those lines. What you're doing is you're taking out every possible excuse or delay tactic off the table. Fine. I can give you some references, but I just want to make sure we're both on the same page. Are you going to ask me for other things after that, or are we ready to move forward if they check out? That way they tell you, no, if they check out, then we're good. Then she can't bring up anything else.
Okay.
You're also doing psychologically something else, is what you're telling her, look, I'm putting you on notice. Let's cut the crap. but you're doing it in a very nice, professional way. So, again, that takes a little bit of courage. I know the first time I did it, I was so nervous. But with practice, it's no problem. And it's a very professional thing to do, and I think people respect you when you do that. So, but I think you'll be able to eliminate a lot of this over time. That is kind of a lot. And yeah, when you position it that way, it's like, yeah, and then they're going to take this more seriously too. And you know what's probably going to happen when you do that? I think you'll find that some of them won't even call.
Okay.
You know, because you call their bluff in a way.
Okay.
Make sense?
Okay. Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it's okay. It's one of those things. But get practice it and practice with somebody else asking that and saying that comfortably and confidently.
Okay.
And I think you'll be okay.
All right.
I had colleagues who actually took that a little bit further. I'm not sure this is necessary, but they would say, sure, I'd be happy to do that. What are you hoping to get from talking to my references? And they would do it so confidently that it worked. They could pull it off.
Right.
I thought, you know, that's a little bit much. But it depends. It depends on who you're talking with and the confidence level you have and who the other person is. And, like, if you're at higher levels, you know, those discussions, you're talking with people who do the same thing to other people.
Right.
So they felt right. But at this level, that might be too much.
Okay. Okay. Well, that was the only question I had for today.
Yeah, no worries. Hey, listen, here's another idea, especially with a situation like this where it's 6 months. Say,
mm-hmm.
Look, I'm happy to provide you with references, but and you say the same thing. And I say, here's another thing. I mean, if you're concerned whether or not this is going to work out, why don't we do a trial?
Yeah.
You know, why don't we do a pilot project? Why don't we do 2 blog posts? I know you got more. I want to do more. I'm not in this for 2. I want to earn your business long term. But why don't we try 2? And
that's a good idea.
And let's just see how we feel. And then you're taking the risk away.
Okay, I like that. I mean, yeah, this is the first time that anybody, typically that's how it starts. They want to do, like, we do one, you know, one thing and see if it works out. This is the first time anyone's wanted, like, this long of a contract off the bat. So
yeah.
That's a good idea.
So that's I'm sure, is playing into the fear.
Okay. All right, well, that sounds good.
All right, good luck.
All right, thanks, Ed.
Oh, you're welcome. Let me know how it turns out, okay?
I will.
All right, good stuff. Let me see. Holly had submitted a question here. Let me go back to this. Okay. I recently launched my writing business, and I'm struggling with my positioning. I have a PhD in English, just awesome. Let's see. And I spent the past couple of years doing editing work for faculty in the computer sciences and engineering departments of the university where I was studying. My editing clients love me, but I want to move away from editing and into writing and copywriting. I'm thinking of targeting managed IT services companies because I think there's a great market for that. Do you think that's too narrow a target market to start out with? All right, so here's the thing, Holly. I would definitely run this through the filtering mechanism that I have in the positioning execution plan, because it's not so much, you know, what's hot, where there's a great market. It's really more about taking a personal inventory and professional inventory and then figuring out, okay, what's going to be the best way to position myself. I find that when people position themselves based on, all right, let's start with where I think there's a market and then back into that, that's very difficult to do. I'd rather see you figure out, okay, where do I have skills and abilities and advantages, and how can I map that to something that's hot out there? That's a better approach. So, you know, just reading into this, it sounds like, you know, you've worked with some really complex topics. If you've edited content for computer science and engineering professors and faculty, that's fantastic. So obviously you can handle complex topics. And I just feel like unless you have a background in managed IT services or you've had some clients already there, that might be a little bit too narrow to start with. So I'd rather see you broaden that a little bit into IT and then speak of the experience you've had, you know, working with complex topics in university settings, in research settings, and then narrow down as you go, as your business grows. That's going to be a better bet than to start out way too narrow, not have anything to back that up or foundation, and then hoping that, you know, because the market, that particular target market is hot, that you'll get some traction. I would go a little bit broader, essentially. A great question, and this is something I come across quite a bit. So you're not alone. A lot of people worry about that and how they're going to – the best way to do this. Okay, so again, guys, if you have a question, star two on your telephone keypad will raise your hand, or you can type in your question if you're on the call page. Excuse me. All right. Oh, cool. I haven't talked to Nathan in a while. Hey, Nathan, you're on. How are you?
Hey, Ed, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Good to talk to you.
Awesome. Okay, I just wanted to make sure I was connected. Hey, it's great to talk to you, too. Some exciting things and just a question about, what you might think I should do next.
Okay.
So last time we connected, I was talking a little bit about the classes I was trying to get into the school system, and one of our members posted a suggestion that I implemented, and it worked. And that was, she said, you should try the local library for a location. And so, because I found the school system to be pretty bureaucratic, it's difficult to it doesn't move very fast. I did contact an administrator that I had worked with, and proposed my idea to him, and he gave me 90 minutes of his time, and we talked, and he said he was going to present it to the upper administrators. And anyway, so that's been kind of waiting. And then there's another teacher that was on my side, and she was wanting to get it into her school. And that is just endlessly waiting, and problems are happening at that school. And she's like, okay, it's not the right time. And I'm like, okay, this is ridiculous. I'm like waiting forever. So I booked a room at my local library. And the cool thing about this library is it has so many technological resources that relate or add value to what we would be doing, and so I charged a decent fee and put it out there, had spaces for 25 students. Teased it a little bit, and then created a sales page, and launched the emailed the link out at 6:15 a.m. on whatever day I did, and at 6:30, 15 minutes after, I had my first registration. 6:45,
wow.
I had another one, and by the first 2 hours, I had 3 registrations, and then after a few more days, I had a total of 10. So I didn't quite fill it up, but I was amazed at how some of them responded so quickly. I mentioned, I'm like, there's only 25 seats. So I'm like, don't wait, cause it could fill up. And I didn't know, what would happen. So that's kind of where we're at. We had our first, so I launched this, 11-week class, and I was only able to book 12. And I used the first week for testing, just to test their systems and stuff. And then Monday of this week, we had our first class. And so the 10 students came up. It was a lot of fun. It was great. And then I've been thinking, okay, how can I get the word out to bring more in? I thought this was also interesting, is that there was a mom who saw the title of this class and asked the library, it's like, how can I get my kid in this? He would really want to do it. And they called me and said, hey, here's this mom who, asked us, give her a call. I called her, talked to her for a few minutes. She was at first she was frustrated that it wasn't a free thing because it was at the library. But I just explained, I'm like, hey, this is, this is what we're doing. I had 48 kids in this last year. They really loved it. Talked about all the good things about it. After we got off the phone in 30 minutes, she registered her son. And that was
That's
all
awesome.
Because she saw the title of this class on some hidden schedule that's hard to find where it was posted for 10 weeks in a row.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, so there's some viable interest. If I could just get the word out to the right people, and I wanted to get it into schools because I'm like, it would be really easy to get a bunch of students and their friends because they're all connected there. I saw how that works. But the system's so bureaucratic, it's frustrating, and it's slow. What are some other ways I could, like, reach my local community, reach parents who have artistic kids, and reach the artistic kids to just let them know about it?
Well, first of all, congratulations. I mean, that is fantastic. You get 10 people registered, and to find the perfect venue for it, I'm glad that worked out, and I'm glad that the idea came from one of our calls. I forget who was the one who suggested that, but that's wonderful.
Right.
So I have a couple of follow-up questions for you. In terms of you send this out, you said you send out an email, so it sounds like you do have. By the way, before we do that, just for others who are not, can you just give us like a 30-second explanation of what this is, because I know there are other people on the call who may not be familiar with what you're doing.
Oh, sure. Right. So I taught art for 2 years in the public school system, and, you know, just found a common interest because I love animation and pop art and media, and offered an after-school program while I was teaching there on that subject, and it was immediately popular. Had, you know, 48 kids that came from that school, which was 15 to 18% of my student body that I taught, and so it was I thought that was a pretty high percentage. Should I say more, or is that enough?
Yeah, so you're trying to do this then on the side, but you're trying to do it with the school systems, and that ties into what you shared today, that it's just been having trouble going through the schools as an after-school
right,
program,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and part of what also brought me to that was parents who were so enthusiastic about what I was doing that they were saying, hey, you know, it's like, it's great you're doing this at this one school, but I see an opportunity for you. If you offered to do this like at other, you know, like days of the week in different schools. And so I was just like, wow, okay, I think I want to try that.
Yeah. Well, all right. So then with that, you have a mailing list, it sounds like, and who's on that mailing list?
Yeah. So this is how I started to put that together, is while I was, in my last semester there, because I knew I was going to leave the school system, a year ago, and so I saw that coming to an end, and so I was just thinking ahead, and I started training my 48 kids who were in this program to connect with me through. I started using a WordPress BuddyPress site. And so I started connecting with them in an online context and relating to them through email. So I got them used to that. So I was able to, leave with a mailing list. And so with the students and parents, I had about, you know, 70 people, something like that. And so I kept interacting with them in an online context, over the course of this year. So I haven't taught them in the school system since last May.
Okay.
And so that's how I started it. And so now I'm just like, okay, how do I keep building and increasing that list?
Yeah, so you, how many people are on the list?
So it's about 70 people.
Still about 70. Okay. So the fact, I tell you what, that's even more impressive. The fact that you're able to get 10 students out of a list of 70, that's pretty amazing. This is a really kind of a big topic, right, because there's a lot of things here. So let me just focus on your main question today is really is it how do I do more of this? You know, now I got a good, great start, found a great place. How do I keep relaunching this program?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like something I was going to do is I found out I can book a separate room in a different library in our local city. So there's like about, you know, eight of them. This is a city of about 400,000 people. And there's about eight or nine branches, different places in the city that are, you know, 15 to 20 minutes away from me. So it's pretty, I don't have to drive too far. And so I can book, you know, another like 3-month class at a different library. I can do that. And I mean, what's cool is it doesn't cost me anything to do it. The only thing is that the library doesn't let me post flyers and that kind of thing for anything that you charge money for, you know. So I've got that kind of thing. And someone suggested, well, why don't you, like, you know, call some of the schools like close to the library and say, hey, I'm working with the library. and they respond to that. But if they call the library is going to say, no, we're not working with him. You know, he's charging money for this class.
Yeah. Well, I think this is going to be a multifaceted strategy. So the location is no longer a problem. Now it's really, how do you get the word out? I think it's going to be, there's not going to be like the one thing that's going to do it all. I think you're going to have to try a number of things and maybe prioritize them based on how you think they'll work. Like, I always think in terms of 80-20, what are the 20% of things that are going to give me 80% of the results, right? And many times you don't know. You think something is in that 20% category but ends up not really working well. But then something else ends up that you didn't think was going to work ends up working really, really well. I think word of mouth is an important one, and just letting parents know that you're looking to grow this program and asking if they know of someone, you know, a friend who could get something out of it. And I think if you have happy students, that's going to be an easy thing. But referrals don't happen on their own. You have to ask. I mean, sometimes they do. We know that. But if you create the kind of environment where it's just kind of a no-brainer, people are going to refer you, and it's going to be very easy for you to ask and for them to go ahead and give you and forward your information. So I think that's one of them. I think cultivate referrals is going to be very important. It sounds like you have very happy students, so that should be easy. I was going to ask you about the library, if there's any way you can post something there, so that's out. What about here in Atlanta, we have in a lot of communities what do they call it? They don't call it. I think it's called an art center, and it's funded by the county, and it's essentially a place where the county has classes in all kinds of different forms of art. So they do pottery there, they do painting, they do all kinds of different classes. Is there something like that where you live?
There are definitely some artistic centers around here. I could definitely call around and see what's available.
Yeah. So do that. Here's what I'm getting at. With any kind of marketing, you want to know, where are my prospects hanging out? That's really what it boils down to. Where are they hanging out? And art centers, that's a no-brainer, right? That they're going to be hanging out there. Where else? You know, so you just have to brainstorm. Where else are these people hanging out? Here's another random idea, because, I mean, I got kids. This is a problem every year, is summer's around the corner. Where am I going to do with these kids? Summer camps, you know? Is that something you would consider? That, to me, is a great entry point in any kind of program. So, for instance, if you run a cooking school, doing a summer camp is very, very smart, because parents are desperate to keep their kids busy with something productive and fun. And then so they're more apt to sign up for a summer program. And then once that's over, then they love it, then there are other opportunities. They're willing to keep going. You see what I'm saying? So I think
right.
if you find – if you position some of them as a summer thing, that might be a really cool thing as well. Now, with summer, as you know, right, it's like what works typically is like a whole week kind of thing
yeah.
or longer. Like
right.
every Monday – you know, and so it's such and such a time is not going to be as effective because parents are looking for something that can fill up their time a little bit more. So just
yeah.
another random thought. I think this is really just going to take some brainstorming in terms of where are they hanging out? How do I cultivate referrals? How do I grow my list? That's another thing. I mean, you're going to have to capture, you got to find a way to capture names. So that you can market to them. People want to know. I just signed up. There's a place here in town that they do all these live shows, and pretty much all they host are cover bands. And it's a really fun place. They got their own restaurant. It's really high-end. It's impressive. And I never find out. I just found out there's a Journey cover band coming up in a couple of weeks, and I totally missed it. They sell out these shows. So I realized that they have a mailing list. I signed up for it immediately. I want to know. I want them to email me. Even if some of the bands I'm not interested in, that's fine. There are people out there who want to know. So if you, especially with referrals, if you don't have anything right now, you want to be able to capture that lead so when you have something coming up, you can notify them. So that's going to be a very important mechanism is for you to have a mailing list, and you want to sign up with an email service provider if you don't already have one.
Okay. Would you do like locally targeted Facebook ads as a possibility?
That's another great one. But with that, you just got to know what you're doing. Facebook has gotten better about that sort of thing. And teaching people, if you want to do something really basic, people in my metro area who have this kind of interest, you just got to figure out what the demographics are. I don't know how targeted they can let you be with something like this. You know, like what would
right.
be a factor, right? Sometimes if you could, like if they're interested in this one thing, is that a given then that there's a, that they would be a candidate for this?
Yeah. Like I was thinking maybe if I targeted my local library as one of the factors in combination with an interest in the subject matter, maybe that might get me somewhere.
It might be too narrow. You may not get enough because, I mean, the library might have 3,000 likes. Even if the library system may only have 10,000 likes. And then you
yeah,
add another
yeah.
filter, that narrows it down too much.
Okay.
Yeah, so going back to the cooking school, if I had a cooking school, I would say anyone in the metro Atlanta area interested in cooking and maybe some other factor, but still keep it broad, then that's better. But yours may be too narrow.
Okay. What do you think
sorry, Nathan, I was just going to say, with Facebook, you got to have the whole machine in place before you do too much. Like, in other words, you got to have a good capture page that sells the opt-in. And then you want to test it. So it's a little bit more involved and you know, just got to be
okay.
a little bit more prepared.
Well, that brings up a question is, what on earth could I create an opt-in about? it's probably more
well,
obvious
I think,
than I'm seeing.
I think for now, because the offer you have is so cool, the class you have is popular and you got some good successes, I think right now it's just like to be notified next time I open a class. I think it's a great start. So, in other words, you don't need a lead magnet or anything like that right now. Again, just like with this place with the cover bands, I honestly just want to know who's coming to town.
Huh. Okay. Yeah, that's good. So something that had come to my mind was if I'm offering a class for free, if I take that approach, then the library will broadcast it out to their email list and they'll let me put up flyers and all these things, and I'm like, I was just thinking of like. It's like, could I think of like a one-time class that I keep repeating?
Yeah.
That would be like maybe an hour or something that I would offer for free to the community that would sort of attract the kind of people that would jump on board with this paid class. My wife cautioned and said, well, if I was like going to take that class and then I found out that it was just a sales pitch, then I would be pissed. I'm like, well, that's not what I would intend to do.
No. But what if you do this? What if the class is really just a way to give them enough to so it's useful and fun, right? All those factors have to be in place, right? So it can't be like, oh, well, to get the rest, you got to sign up. No, nothing like that. It's kind of like its own self-contained mini class. Students would walk out of there with some cool stuff. They had fun. They're glad they went. And then you're able to follow up in a very low-key way. Like, hopefully you can at least, like, get registrations or have some sort of follow-up mechanism. I'm sure there's got to be a way to do that, you know? And then you just follow up with people in a very low-key way. If you do a good job with that, your conversion rate is going to be really good.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's like I guess I could do something like I don't know. This popped in my head. You know, it's like how to get my 11-year-old into animation. You know, and it's like what and then to leave out there all like these free resources that are available for them for something like that, you know, sort of an educational approach to orienting them to, you know, the whole thing.
Okay. I like that. So if you could you put something like that together? Is that something you think if he did it would be valuable and you think it's something you could do?
Oh, seriously. Yeah. If a parent the parents of the kids that I taught wanted to ask me, and it's like, how could I get my kid into doing their own animation at home? I could talk to them for an hour, you know, and just go on and on.
If you at this event then announce in the end, instead of pitching the class, you said, parents, I have a resource for you. It's called, you know, 11 tools for your kid to do their own animation. I'd be happy to email you a copy. I got a registration form here on this clipboard. Not a registration form, just a sign up here. Just put your name and email here, and I'll get it to you. And then what you do is then you email all those people so you say, here you go. By the way, I wanted to let you know I'm about to start a class, you know, starting in a couple of weeks, and here's some information on it if you're interested, something like that.
Okay.
And then maybe one other follow-up email, and that's it, you know?
Great, okay. Yeah, that's really helpful. And, you know, for whatever reason, you probably know why, I just couldn't think of that on my own.
No, hey, well, we got to talk it out. As you and I are talking, we're kind of feeding off each other.
Great.
And I think what you're trying to do is you're trying to stair-step people in a way that won't get you in trouble with the library, because that's another reason why I wouldn't want you to pitch at the library, because that kind of puts them in a tough situation, right? It's got to be free. So don't, you know, I mean, respect that. Just make it free, then offer a really cool resource. It doesn't have to be a 40-page thing. It could be like a 3-page resource guide with links and a brief description of each. Sell that, if you will, sell, quote-unquote, sell that at the end. Have a clipboard ready with a form, name and email, and then follow up with those people. And I guarantee you, I mean, because what just happened, the people who raised their hand, essentially, are those who know their kids are either interested in it or they want their kids to be interested. So then your offer for the class is kind of a no-brainer. You're not now saying, well, listen, I also sell Amway, and, you know, I got some soap.
Yeah, right. yeah, that's
not totally out of it. It's like completely aligned with what you've been delivering.
Hmm. Wow. Okay. Great. That's awesome. I had another thought that I thought about trying too. Just wanted to know your thoughts on it. Is for motivating or incentivizing referrals. You know, it's like I'm charging, you know, for like a 12 for a 12-week class, an option to pay for the entire thing up front and save a few dollars, or pay like I'm charging $47 a month. They could, you know, for 3 months, and to set up automated, you know, payment thing in WooCommerce, and I was thinking that if one of my students, you know, wanted to invite somebody, and if they signed up, then the student who invited them, I would give them like one of those months for free. What do you think? Am I giving away too much? Do I not need to do that?
I think you're giving away too much. Yeah, first of all, you're giving away too much. I would experiment with just asking for referrals first.
Okay.
And then that could be something to look at later, some kind of incentive like that. And even then, I think that's giving away too much, because I think the class is already priced very aggressively. And to then do the last month for free is a lot. So that's number one. Number two, I want you to think about why people really refer businesses to others. They do it because, well, there's a couple of very good reasons. But like when I refer, I want to be seen as a guy who's in the know. I want to be, and I also want to be helpful. So if I refer somebody, hey, you know, my kid, it was in the summer camp last week. Love it. I'm not doing it because of an incentive that the camp is offering me. I'm doing it because we really had a great experience, and I want to be seen as the person who's in the know and is resourceful and has got great ideas. Because guess what happens when their kid signs up and he loves it or she loves it? I look good, right? So that's why I'm doing it. If you think about it, everyone's doing it for that. So everybody's got to win. And when you offer an incentive, you're saying, that doesn't matter. I know that it's not good enough, so I need to offer you this financial incentive. You know?
Okay.
Now, we see this all the time. So it's like, well, Ed, it's got to work because I know a lot of businesses do it. They do. First of all, I would argue about the effectiveness of the approach. Secondly, usually these are mass market products and services, so there's a difference. And third, I've gotten to the point when even with those businesses, if I'm referring a friend or a neighbor to another business, even if there's an incentive, I will let my friend know, hey, I think they got some sort of like referral thing, but I mean, honestly, we love them so much. It has nothing to do with that. I'm just telling you. In fact, I almost would rather not have that kind of incentive from the company, because I don't want it to make it sound to my friend like I'm getting something out of the deal, like there's a conflict of interest. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes it a little bit more sleazy, I guess, you know. So
it just feels that way. So I think you got enough going that, honestly, the fact that these kids are happy and that should be enough, and I think it is enough. So just prey on human psychology instead of financial incentives, and understand that for a referral to work, in fact, I'm putting together an execution plan for you guys on this, three people have to win. Of course, you have to win, but they have to, the person who's going to get referred has to win, and then the person referring has to win as well. And they win by being the resourceful person.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, that makes sense, because I did get a referral from, you know, one of my students that I'd just been working with on an experimental basis, wasn't even charging anything for it for the past year. And when I offered this class, that one student didn't want to do the paid class, but she's like, well, I have this friend, and the friend signed up, you know, so. And I didn't incentivize at all, you know, so.
There you go. Cool. Well, hey, man,
yeah.
keep us posted. I'm curious to know how this works out. But do you think you walked away with some good ideas here?
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely. I'm real excited about what just kind of came out of our conversation. So I've got an idea for a physical opt-in and a, you know, a class, you know, opt-in, so to speak, that I could do with the library. Just to make connection with parents and that's awesome. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, Nathan. Good luck.
Yeah, thanks, Ed. Thank you so much.
You bet, buddy. All right. So again, guys, star two, if you have a question, need feedback on anything. I don't see any raised hands. I just want to make sure I'm not missing anyone. So if you raised it and you thought it was raised, I'm not seeing it. Just FYI. Good stuff from Nathan, and just a great example of how, you know, one of the great things about freelancing is you can explore different adjacent businesses and side hustles too that relate to what your profession is. So I think that adds I don't know. I think it adds to the whole fun factor of being self-employed for sure. All right, let's see. I got Elizabeth. You are on. How are you? Hello.
Hi, Ed. Sorry, I just took it off of mute. Just in case.
Yeah, how's it going?
Oh, okay. I just thought I would go ahead and raise my hand since no one else, it sounded like no one else had any other questions.
It's all you.
I just have to be really honest and say that after a couple of years of trying to get myself to do what it takes to freelance, I'm finding I just cannot seem to make myself do it. And I don't mean, like, when I have clients and, you know, I don't have a problem doing the work. But I, you know, obviously I've been paying for this, you know, to be part of the academy for a good while. I frankly haven't hardly worked it at all other than in the beginning. I did just redo my website on GoDaddy because I didn't like the interface that I had. I have what should be pretty good experience, the 8 years with PwC in marketing and writing, and then I have many years of writing. But I just find, one, I get really overwhelmed by how, like, all the things that it seems like clients are looking for now. For instance, SEO. I understand SEO basics. I went through the inbound certification program with HubSpot, but I really haven't had the opportunity to put it into action, you know, with a client. So that's just an example. It's not that I'm, you know, not willing to learn new things. I'm interested. Anything to me that increases getting client results, I'm interested in that. The other thing is, like, it seems like the competition in terms of creativity, that bar seems very high. You had a someone on your podcast fairly recently about that. Like, why is it getting harder or something like that to write good blog posts?
Oh, Steve Roller, I think. Yeah.
No, actually, it was a woman. It was the you had sort of two back-to-back ones that were similar. Like, one was on conversational copywriting, which, of course, I actually enrolled in that and haven't done a thing. I mean, so I guess I'm looking for a kick in the, you know, because I'm almost to the point where I'm just like, okay, Liz, you're not doing this, so you're just going to have to do something else. But I can't keep on.
So what do you think is standing in your way? Like, what's keeping you stuck that's not making this fun or something you feel like you want to do?
I think it's the putting myself out there. I think it's the fear. Even though I know that at a certain level it's irrational. But I just have not seemed to be able to get past it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if there are any answers. Actually, one thing I was thinking of is that I think I could benefit from an accountability partner.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking about reaching out on the Facebook group about that.
Yeah.
See if someone else would like that. And but I'm really very close to just trying to just get a regular job. In fact, I'm starting to look and I'm also looking at contracting as well.
Well, so first of all, I think it's I think it is a good idea to look for an accountability partner. And if you posted something in the forum, I'm sure you'll find somebody. Of course, if you can maybe give a little bit of guidance there, you post it in terms of like where mm-hmm. you are right now,
yes.
I think that would help. Maybe
right.
somebody who
right.
you're looking for someone who maybe kind of in the early stages or has tried some things but hasn't been successful, and you're trying to – you're just trying to get things going, and who would benefit from an accountability partner. So that's one thing. What I'm hearing, and just correct me if I'm wrong, is that you recognize now that there's two aspects to this, right? It's one is doing the work, and the other is finding the work. So it's like hunting and cooking. And you have some concerns about the cooking, but the hunting is really kind of a big one. It's just getting out there to hunt that's been a challenge for you. Am I getting that right?
Yes. Yeah. Right.
I don't think the cooking part, I mean, you mentioned SEO as an example. I actually don't think that's an issue. Because if you were to say, the only opportunities out there are for writers who already know SEO and know it well, then yeah. But there's so much out there that, okay, so what? They need somebody with SEO experience, with a proven track record. You know what? I'm just not your gal. That's fine. Let's find somebody else. There's plenty out there that, to be worried about that one thing. So I don't think that's the issue. What I'm hearing is that it's the having a plan and then consistently executing that plan. Because, I mean, that's the only
exactly.
way. And fortunately,
mm-hmm.
and this doesn't happen on its own. I've been saying this for years that I think one of the dangers of being traditionally employed for a long time, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but it's just that I was out there for a while, and the problem is that you become accustomed to the work coming to you, right? You're in an office,
right.
and you have certain
Absolutely,
responsibilities.
Yes.
People are depending on you. Even if you're working in a collaborative environment, it's like, this is my work, and it's being handed to me. you don't have to go out and hunt for the work. And that is something that we traditionally in this country are not trained to do. So then when you go out there and become self-employed, now you have to develop this new skill of looking for the work. And that can be a challenge. So I get that. I will say this. It's a learnable skill. I don't think people are born that way. I don't think it's a natural thing. It comes easier to others than to some. I will admit that. But this is something anyone can learn. It has two things. There's a skill development there. Actually, three. There's discipline and habit to execute it there. Mm-hmm. And then there's the mindset component, right? The just feeling the fear and doing it anyway. And that's a hard thing, but there's no way out of it. I think Nike really had it right. It's just do it. The way you expand your comfort zone is by continually stepping right outside of it. I'm not talking about leaving it completely. I think it's a hard thing to ask people to do, but just continually just toying with the edges of your comfort zone. But that you have to be very mindful and purposeful about that. And growth does not happen right in the middle of your comfort zone. You know, you have to keep doing it. Now, here's the good thing, Elizabeth, is I was just talking in another call to some folks about this. No matter what you end up doing, if you really just do give this your best over the next few months, nobody can take that away from you, because this is a business where you have to become your best in every way in order to succeed. And the skills you have to develop and the competencies and the mindset that you have to develop to do this well are things you can take with you no matter what you end up doing. Like if I had to find a different way to make a living tomorrow, I am very confident that I would be a better candidate than most others if I were competing with others, because I have been through hell and back. And, you know, when you have the scar tissue, like, nobody can take that away. So I think beyond
making a
living.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I think, yeah.
Right, but besides making a living, I think this is a great way to grow personally and professionally in a way that a traditional job. So I'm not trying to sell the fact that you should stay here. I'm just saying, like, there are other aspects to this to consider. So just a thought.
No, that's very helpful, Ed. I mean, I knew, you know, that you would have something. I mean, it's not like you haven't covered this before. You know? Isn't this just the main thing? You know, It to me, it's just remarkable that I keep on running into it. I mean, mainly because I had my own business before for 10 years. But I was younger and I was more desperate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I also I had like a very, very clear plan, and I had trust that it would work. And it wasn't just freelancing, because I'd actually tried that before. And I'd done, you know, okay. I hadn't made a lot of money, but it got me through the period that I needed to get through. And I actually did better in my career when I went back to work. So as you said, you know, it proves what you said, no matter what you do. If you do this, it will, and, you know, you will grow and improve and develop new skills. But the second business I tried was so focused, and I knew it wouldn't, I was trying to get away from the whole hourly project to project thing, because I knew that was really hard for me. And I knew that the marketing was hard for me. Even though, you know, I do that for other people, but I know it's hard to do it for myself. So That's how, you know, I picked that business, but it happened to be a very, it's a business that ran its course. It was direct mail lead generation. And I did that because it had a model. Again, it wasn't based on hourly, and that I could really, it was very like disciplined. And, you know, once a client, you know, gets, you know, they need a steady flow of leads, period. You know, as you know, you know. So if you're good at that, and you know, so I offered a turnkey service, and it was a great business model, which I had actually gotten from the mentors that I'd had, consultants that I had hired before when I was internal. You know, so they had blown everyone else away with their model. So I when I went out on my own, I copied their model, which they were, you know, fine with. They were very supportive. But anyway, I at the time, after 10 years, I had sort of run its course, and I was ready to try something else. And I did end up going to work for PwC for 8 years, and I surprised myself in actually enjoying working for someone until that my roles changed and it got bad. But so anyway, that's sort of, I thought that I should be able to get through, you know, get past these things. But yeah, I just, and believe me, I'm like trying to go to therapy too, you know, figure out like what the heck is wrong with me.
No, well, it's, you know, it's not that you're flawed or anything. So I think this is just, there's I mean, if you were to narrow it down, I mean, and be honest, if so, let's say you are giving yourself advice, you are somebody else, you know, what would you say you would need to do to get things on track?
Well, I would have to have a very clear plan, as you said, and then be very disciplined about executing on it. And have accountability to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
I know that that's a factor for me. So
I'm you, right? I'm you just sharing all that you just shared with you.
Mm-hmm.
Roles are reversed.
Mm-hmm.
And you would tell me, mm-hmm. All right, you need an action plan, and you need to execute on that consistently, and then you need the accountability. That's what I'm hearing.
Mhm. Mhm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beyond, right. I mean, just, you know, supporting yourself through, you know, things that boost your confidence and so on, which I do. I mean, I exercise, and I'm very, you know, healthy and all, you know, those kinds of things. I have supportive people. So,
you're taking care of yourself.
Absolutely. Right.
So here's what I would urge you to do. I mean, I think you know what the answer is. It's just a matter of then taking those first few steps. There's the plan, execution, and then accountability to make sure that you execute consistently, that you do what you say you're going to do. I think there's there's another item that could help that you mentioned a little earlier. I find this has been the secret to a lot of what I've been able to achieve, and that is having no choice.
to the point. Yeah.
Right. You know, when my wife left her job, you know, to have her first kid, and then she went back home after the second one. I mean, I have to be the sole breadwinner. And when you got bills to pay,
right.
You know, you do what you have to do. Of course, as long as it's legal and ethical and all that, right? But you do, what I'm saying is you stretch yourself and you do more than you would normally do because you have no choice. And
I call it the gift of desperation.
Absolutely. And we all know that works. I have no doubt that if I had to do even more because of an emergency, I could produce even better results. It's just, you know, so I don't have to do that necessarily, so I don't. So, I mean, this is all up to you. Again, I'm not trying to sell you either scenario as one being better than the other. I'm just saying if this is something you still want to try, and I would say do what Yoda says, right? Don't try. Either do or don't do. But if this is something, if you want to give it your best before you decide for sure, then you have your plan of action right there. The execution plan in the academy on developing your marketing plan, I think, would be a great place for you to start, because all you need to end up with is just a handful of things. It's not that much. But that will help you decide, okay, what's going to work for me? And, just start there. And frankly, it's not going to be as monumental as you might think right now. I think you already know a lot of what you need to do, and it's just a matter of writing it down, building the discipline. When it comes to this stuff, I found that first thing in the morning is really the best way, because it gets done.
Yeah.
And then having that accountability.
Okay.
So I'm going to go ahead and hold you accountable right now. I want to see by the weekend a post in the forum that you're looking for an accountability partner.
Yes.
I think that's a good start.
I feel like because I have a lot of writing experience, I could maybe help someone else in that area. But if someone is better in some of the other areas, that they can help me. Do you think that that's worth mentioning? Or
I would say you're looking for an accountability partner who's in the early stages of getting their business off the ground, or they've already tried, but, you know, now we're like it's a relaunch or second attempt, and you need accountability with the marketing. Right. You're trying to crank up the marketing machine, and you need accountability there because you're not getting it done. You don't have the energy, the motivation many times. But you know that if somebody was holding you accountable, and if they were the same way and you could hold them accountable, then that could make a big difference. And I think you'll find that a lot of people fit that description. Because this is the marketing piece is what most of us avoid.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
But there's just no way around it.
But I do trust the process. You know, I do believe that if you do it, it works. I mean, it is a process, and it's proven.
Exactly.
So,
and like you said, you do this for clients.
Yeah.
I mean, you know this. This is not a new thing. It's just when it comes to your own stuff, that's where you have the block. So just keep pushing. With accountability, that will help, but I think it's – and then you may also want to take a look at the imposter syndrome session that I did. I don't know. Have you seen that?
I remember hearing about it. Like, I forget. Is that an execution plan or the
That's an Academy Insider. So if you go to Academy Insider section, you'll see it there. And I think that might be helpful. I that stuff really helped me. I still struggle with it. Not as much, but it still rears its ugly head. And it's the kind of thing you can't eliminate. You just have to learn how to live with it and manage it. And the problem for us is, especially when I hear people saying, I can do this. What's wrong with me? I can do this for clients. Why can't I do this for myself? There must be something wrong. Maybe I'm a fraud. That's kind of what's going on in the back, and that could really mess you up. So there's some I think, useful and practical stuff
yeah.
in there.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's an area. Okay. Thank you, Ed. I appreciate it.
You are welcome. Hey, and listen.
I should put it out there.
I congratulate you for being vulnerable and sharing that. I know that's not the easiest thing to do, so kudos to you.
All right. Thank you.
My pleasure. My pleasure, Elizabeth. Okay, let me see here. I want to make sure I don't miss anybody. I don't see any hands raised. I'll do one last call. I want to make sure I don't miss anything in case somebody thought they had their hand raised. I don't see any raised hands. If there's one more question out there, happy to answer it. Let's see. I got Robin. Robin, hey, how are you?
Good, and you, Ed?
Doing well. It's good to talk to you.
Same here. So I just have a quick question on this. Can you talk about follow-up for the nine-word email?
Sure.
So should you do it? Should you not do it?
In terms of follow-up with prospects or with dormant clients or what specifically?
With dormant, mainly dormant clients. Or, yeah, so they haven't heard from them in a while. And then you just send them an email, a nine-word email, you know, are you still looking to, you know, hire that white paper writer or whatever.
Yeah,
and then you
okay,
know they,
so.
Sometimes you know they opened up your email, but they don't respond to you. And
yeah.
Sometimes you see they've not opened up your email.
I think for dormant and past clients, nine-word emails work really well as part of your nurturing effort. So, because they should be in your nurturing bucket, right? These are prospects with whom you might be able to do some more work again. It's not like the relationship ended because they were mad at you. It's just kind of the reason they hired you. That's done. But you know there could be some potential future needs, so you should stay in touch with them every couple of months. I think every 3 months at the most. If you have a newsletter as well, you should definitely make sure they're on there. So then that's yet another layer of follow-up. And then with your manual nurturing, not your newsletter, your manual nurturing, I think maybe every third or so touch point could be a nine-word email. So it's like, hey, Bill, came across this article. I thought you'd find it interesting. It's on X, Y, or Z or whatever. Robin, then the next one could be something similar. And then the third one could be a nine-word email. You know, are you still thinking about doing X sometime this year? That sort of thing.
Okay.
That's the way I would use it. The way Janet is using it was for new leads. So it's a little different because we're trying to kickstart a conversation. So there's no relationship yet. But that can't happen unless you can kickstart some sort of conversation.
Okay. All right. So then that brings up another question about when you send newsletters out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm using AWeber so I can see who actually opened the email. I can see which links they clicked on. And I will say that the maritime ones that I send out, I've been getting a much better response. So almost, well, I'd say like 45% are opening them.
Okay.
Pretty good. But the ones that don't open it, can I just assume that for whatever reason they didn't see the email and just like resend it the next day or send it?
This would be a newsletter, right? Is this a newsletter or
right.
would it be if
it, yeah. No, okay. This is a newsletter that I send out. And it's usually about some story about something that happened at one of the shows that we were just at. So I've been
I don't know if I would
a lot
do
of people
that.
At the shows and sent them.
Well, so here's the thing, though. If it, first of all, many times it's not completely accurate because, as you know, some things have to happen for it to register as open, or they could have images turned off. There's several things that could happen that shows you that they haven't opened it when, in fact, they have. So that's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is sending it again. I don't think that would really do much. I think when doing that kind of dynamic marketing works is if you're doing some kind of marketing campaign. Something I've tried before, for instance, is, all right, everyone who opened email number one or clicked on the link inside of it but didn't take the action, in other words, they didn't sign up for this
right.
class, then go ahead and send them the first email again. That sort of thing. That can work really well, but that's different. That's a campaign. But we're
mm-hmm.
talking about information, just kind of staying in touch. I wouldn't send it again.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think there would be much value in doing that. And if anything, I mean, I think what the most common scenario is they did get it, they saw it, but they didn't open it. They just let it kind of keep going
mm-hmm.
down in their inbox, or they deleted it. I mean, and don't take that personally. It just happens, you know.
Right, because I do the same thing to people.
Yeah.
So I don't take it personally. I used to, not anymore.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess the last one that goes with that is the same people that are on my email list. I want to send them just a quick, short little survey, just asking if they'd be interested in a particular webinar program,
mm-hmm.
and maybe it's the format. So do I just send it with and do like a SurveyMonkey and then just put the link in it, ask them if they take it, or what's the best way to handle that?
So this would be for people on your mailing list, you're just trying to gauge interest on something like a webinar?
Yes.
Before, what's the purpose there? Just to see, you don't want to put it together if there's no interest?
Right, because I also want to propose it to as a program through the overall organization.
Okay.
Like an event.
I'm not sure. And you have AWeber, right? You said.
Right.
I don't think AWeber has tagging capabilities, or they might have some sort of simple survey capability. I would check in first. Really the best approach is if there's any way that you can get information just from the click, that would be ideal. So in other words, you could say, just click here for yes or click here for no. And then I usually add a sentence that says, you won't be taken anywhere. They'll just tell my system, you know, whether or not you're interested. And I say that because the first time I tried this, the first couple of times, people were clicking on it, not because they were interested, but because they were curious what would happen if they clicked yes.
mm-hmm.
So if they have that capability, that's even cleaner. You'll get better results with that. Because the moment you tell somebody,
okay.
can you fill out the survey, that feels like work. So then you have to diffuse
right.
it by saying, it's a one-question survey, it's a yes or no. So if that's your only choice, I think that's fine, but just let them know how easy it's going to be. And I tell people, it's a one-question survey, it's a yes or no question, it'll take you all of 3 seconds. And then I get people clicking and answering.
Okay. Right.
Now, on
okay.
that type of email, I
yep.
do send it twice. I'll send it one time. I usually get double the response when I do that. And then like a week later or a few days later, I'll send it again, maybe a different subject line.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get 50 to 100% of the number of emails or responses I got the first time.
All right. And when you send it the second time, you send it to the same people?
Yep.
Or the ones that didn't open. Oh, okay.
Yeah, to the same people who didn't respond. So there's a
same
way
list.
For you to segment. Yeah. I automatically segment. So if they've responded, then I don't. But see, it depends, because if the survey is through SurveyMonkey, I won't know. That's another benefit of doing it through AWeber. If they have that capability, then you can automatically segment and create a rule saying, all right, send this email, but only to those who didn't respond yes or no.
Right.
And what I do, if I don't know, then I apologize ahead of time. Hey, sent this out last week. In case you didn't get a chance, here it is again, and I apologize. Then a P.S., sorry if you've already done it. Just sending it one more time.
All right. So would it be better to do that separately, or I have another newsletter going out like next week, and what I've been doing is underneath the actual article, then like in the next block, I have some promotion thing in there, and they've been clicking on like all my links lately that are in there. So would it make sense to put it with the article and then put it like on, have it in its own separate box underneath? And by the way, I'm, you know, thinking of doing this.
Yeah, I would do both. So if you have a newsletter going out, add it to your newsletter, but then send out a solo email just about the survey, and then a second one a week later to those who haven't responded. And again, if you have no way of knowing, then just send it out again and apologize ahead of time if they already have. Now, with a newsletter, though, I would actually flip that. I would say something to the effect of, before we get to this month's article, I have a quick favor. I get this one question survey. I'm trying to gauge interest on this idea. And then, okay, now for this month's article, something along those lines. That way you call attention to it. You get much better response there than if you put it at the bottom.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because I usually write some little blurby thing in the beginning of it as well. Like, hey, you know, this is what's going on this month. So, okay, sounds good.
Cool.
All right.
All right, Robin. Good talking to you.
Same here. Thanks, Ed.
All right, guys. Great call. Man, we had some great questions today. So thank you for being active participants. Enjoyed chatting with you today. We'll post the replay tomorrow in case you came in late or want to go back to anything we talked about. Let's keep that conversation going in the forum. I'll be on the lookout for Liz's post. And Nathan, let us know in the forum how you end up doing with some of these ideas. Just curious to see how it turns out. You guys have a great rest of the day, wonderful weekend, and we'll talk again next month. Take care.